me. You know just how to touch me. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a smooth soul Monday. That's where Patrick plays jams intended to make your transition from the very relaxing, hopefully stress-free weekend, a holiday weekend that you had. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July holiday weekend and a very lengthy holiday weekend. Back into the work week, and sometimes the stress of the work week, the traffic and the meetings can just slap you in the face, and it can be really tough and abrupt, and we don't want that to happen. So in order to make that a smooth transition, my man Patrick has created Smooth Soul Mondays for y'all out there. So who is singing this? What jam is this?
This is Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes.
Wow, good stuff there. Yeah, I don't think I don't think I've ever heard this song before. What's the name of it?
You Know How to Make Me Feel So Good.
Okay, that makes sense from yes. terms of the first lyrics that I heard. So I'll try to let it breathe and open up, and I was like, oh, okay, let me just come on in. It's like, touch me. I was like, okay, you know what?
Just gentle back rubs, I'm sure.
exactly, right? Yeah, there you go. All right, there you go. My man Patrick hooking you up on a smooth soul Monday. All right, so we'll get into some NFL discussion here. I got a couple of NFL topics that I'll dive into in Rod's Rant of the Day. I'm thinking about looking at this, or at least talking to you guys about a new study that I saw about NFL players and states with the most NFL players per million. Right, I think this study was done per million. Usually it's done per capita. They did it per million here. It's really interesting, some of the data that was thrown out there. So we'll get into that, and I'll share that with you guys coming up in Rod's Rant of the Day. We'll also, in Rod's Rant, we'll dive into another story that I thought was pretty interesting, a study done about scoring first in football, well, in the NFL. And I think it applies to college, too. I've even seen some numbers in college, but I'll share those numbers with you. It's pretty, I think it's pretty interesting, and some of it kind of mind-blowing, some of the numbers about simply how scoring first correlates to winning football games. And there's got to be some psychology in it. So we'll talk about that and dive into it in Rod's Rant. But first, we'll talk Cowboys. Before we do any of that, let's get updated. Let's get educated and informed on all the top stories of the day with my man Patrick Davis and the Horn Headlines.
All right, your Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the NBA, the Sacramento Kings acquired free agent DeMar DeRozan in a 3-year, $74 million sign-and-trade deal. The Kings are trading Harrison Barnes in an unprotected 2031 pick swap to San Antonio and Chris Duarte in 2 second-round picks to the Bulls to complete the deal. DeRozan, a 6-time All-Star who will turn 35 next month, is coming off an impressive 3-year scoring run with the Bulls, where he averaged over 24 points last season. In the MLB, the Astros dropped their series to the Twins 2-1 after a Christian Vasquez walk-off home run on Sunday. The Astros are now 2 games back of Seattle for the lead in the AL West, with 2 more series to go before the All-Star break. Ronyel Blanco will get the start for Houston when they return to action against the Marlins on Tuesday. And the Rangers swept the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend, including a dominant 13-2 win on Sunday. Corey Seager and Travis Jankowski both added 4 RBIs each, while Nathan Eovaldi pitched another solid start, going 7 innings, only allowing 2 runs. The Rangers begin a series with the Angels tonight, hoping to continue their winning momentum with John Gray taking the mound. And that is your Horn Headlines.
All right, Patrick, thank you for the Horn Headlines. Appreciate those. All right, so over the weekend, Dak was seen in a walking boot. He was on vacation. He was seen in a walking boot. Oh, man, and Twitter blew up. I mean, it was just Cowboys fans and NFL fans and sizes blew up. Somebody took that picture, and I'm sure Dak did not want that getting out.
Yeah.
But it did. And so he had to, I think on vacation, his people had to put out a statement about, hey, man, what's going on, man? You were seeing the walking boot. What's the deal? And it turns out, and I got this from Todd Archer, said Dallas Cowboys quarterback, he recently suffered a minor right foot sprain. So no need to panic. It was a minor right foot sprain that temporarily required a walking boot. Said Prescott was seen in a walking boot while on vacation in Cabo San Lucas in a picture posted to X on Wednesday. It was unclear when the picture was taken, and he is no longer wearing the boot, according to sources. It was just mostly, you know, for him, just cautionary, preventative. The injury is not expected to impact Prescott when the Cowboys hold their first training camp practice on July 25th. And it's not known how Prescott suffered the injury. The Cowboys last held an organized workout on June 5th. So it's not a big deal. Nothing to freak out about, Cowboys fans. But yes, I guess he just underestimated how famous he was. I mean, you are the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. You're not going to be able to hide the fact that you're in a walking boot if you're out on vacation, even if it is in Cabo San Lucas. I mean, that's just the reality of it. The Cowboys are the number one TV star on the number one TV show in America, and you are the starting quarterback. By the way, coming off your best season. Sorry, that's just the way it works out. So
it's funny because it seemed like he was trying to do the right thing, which is, you know, I didn't really hurt myself, so I'll just put the bubble wrap on it because I really want to make sure I'm healthy. Like, yes. I really don't need this. This is really over the top. But let's be safe, rather safe than sorry. I don't want to ruin this season. It's a big year for me. So don't let a little thing become a big thing. And then, of course, someone takes a picture of it. And he's like, I don't even need this. But, you know, it's that old school of you would have tried to tape it up and wear socks or something so that no one knew it was hurt underneath. And totally you get away with it. But then you risk. And maybe he was going to have a few drinks. And he's like, look. A few drinks on a boat. It's a good way to hurt an ankle.
No, you're right. That's a great point. But he was basically trying to be responsible.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know what? I don't want, you know, hey, what if I slip? What if I get on the boat, do something weird? You know what? Nope. I'm just going, if I have the boot on, then I will be cautious just because I have it on. It won't allow me to do some stuff. And you're right. It blew up in his face. I actually love that about Dak, though. It shows that he is being responsible. And he should, by the way, it's his money year.
Yeah,
I mean, he's either going to get paid this offseason, and once you get paid, you want to have a great year. You don't want to get paid the money and then have a terrible year or get hurt. That's not, you know, players got too much pride for that. And if you do have to play on the last of your contract, dude, this is the year. You want to be at your best, and you definitely don't want an injury to, you know, devalue your season and your worth as a player. So this is a big year for Dak. Legacy-wise, this is a big year for Dak.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's the – you know, he's probably understanding sports science. One of the things he was talking about is like preventative maintenance and it's stuff of, you know, I know the more you injure your ankle, the easier it is to injure your ankle. The tendons become looser and things like that. So I'm just being super precautious about it. And again, you're talking about he hasn't got paid. Even if, you know, if he goes in this training camp and they're, you know, about to work on a deal and they're getting close to it and they say, well, yeah, but he's got to sit out 2 weeks of training camp because of an injury. You don't think the Joneses are going to walk back and go, well, then we're taking off some money off this deal, right? If this guy can't even stay healthy over the offseason when he's not playing, you're going to take money off the deal from him now, right?
And so he knows that
as well. So, I wouldn't be surprised if that was Jerry Jones' people taking pictures surrounding him.
Hey, I'm sure there's somebody on the grassy knoll right now, and there's a conspiracy theory saying, but I'm sure somebody out there is like, you know what? If you could prove that Dak was dealing with a serious injury, that would indeed devalue him. It is not a serious injury.
Let's put it this way. If that would have been me on vacation and I saw Dak Prescott in a walking boot, I would have taken the picture and I probably would have sent it to some of my friends, and then some of my friends work in sports media. So it may have leaked out that way because I would have taken a picture. Would have been like, hey, this is something that's noticeable.
Yeah, I don't know where it originated from either. Like, I really don't. I just saw it, and then it made the round. So you're right. I don't know where it did. I don't know if somebody just, as soon as they took it, they posted it, or if it did come through an actual source of the media, or if it just came via social media. I'm not sure. But it blew up quick, fast, in a hurry. And no big deal. But like you said, Dak was trying to do the right thing, and it blew up in his face. Also, did you see this? And, man. The Cowboys are, and this is, you know what? It's just smart by the Cowboys, by the way. You notice that, and maybe it's because we cover the Cowboys, but it can't be like this with any other team. There's always so much beef and drama within the Cowboys organization, or even with former players, with players within the locker room. We were just talking about Malik Hooker, Micah Parsons beef, right, that was going on. Now apparently there's a Cole Beasley, CeeDee Lamb beef that's going on. I remember even their family members get on. Dak's brother is always in on it. There's always Dez Bryant's always got something to say about somebody and something. And you know, it's just, I mean, hell, I remember CeeDee Lamb's mom. You remember this? Like back in, I want to say it was like CeeDee Lamb's mom actually had something to say on social media, and you know that became part of the social media conversation on Cowboys Twitter. I mean, there's always beef and pettiness among the Cowboys family and extended family.
Yes,
and their family drama, it always gets out, and it's just I think they're the only ones like that because they just have. First of all, they got a lot of guys in the media that are former Cowboys. Number one. But it's just encouraged that – remember Jesse Holly and Micah Parsons had that thing? It's just encouraged, I think, because they're the number one TV show in America, and they're the number one – basically, they're the number one TV star, I should say, on the number one TV show. But they act like a reality show. They're like a reality TV show in itself, the Cowboys are. And there's always some random beef, and then there's always kind of this pettiness that's thrown out there. And by the way, beef and pettiness, it does sell. I mean, Drake and Kendrick Lamar just had a beef that kind of reignited hip-hop. And pettiness, go ask how being petty and beef, what it does for women's basketball and how it's kind of rejuvenated interest in basketball. It works now. It's a proven formula. And the Cowboys use it. And it's kind of this Kardashian element to the way the Cowboys operate. Anyway, the latest is, okay, in case you haven't heard, CeeDee Lamb and Cole Beasley got into it. So Cole Beasley, CeeDee Lamb puts out these videos, workout videos, and they're actually pretty impressive. He's a freak, man. He's got the fastest feet, like, of any human being. He looks, I mean, he has some of the fastest footwork I've ever seen for a wide receiver. Just go look at his feet compared to other wide receivers. When he's running, decelerating, and accelerating, getting in and out of routes. Man, it is freaky. Trust me, from his former defensive back, he's one of the guys I would hate to have to cover. I mean, and I don't really know what my success rate would be against him. So anyway, he put out a workout video, all right? And after the workout video came out, Cole Beasley quote tweeted the workout video, captioned it, "Man, just do some heavy squats and power cleans, ... And I don't know if he was joking or what, but after he said that, the people kind of came after him, like the Cowboys Twitter came after him and was like, "Are you trying to tell CeeDee Lamb how to work out? Like you know better than what CeeDee Lamb is doing." And he said this: give me 180 targets off the couch and I eclipse 1,000. Stop looking at stats and check the tape. As far as getting open goes, ... I'm confident I did that with the best of them." And then CeeDee Lamb himself he's like, "Hold up, people talk. Because when your name is trending on Twitter, you're going to check out why it's trending, so I'm not getting on those guys." But he probably didn't have to, you know, put in his 2 cents, but he did. He did. He fell for it. Just like Micah falls for it. Remember Micah and Malik Hooker, he responded. They need to delete the tweet. CeeDee Lamb said, "I don't need 180 targets to touch a band. Pull up tape. I'd match you route for route on getting open. Just chill. @B's11. So we added them. Wanted to make sure, hey, just so you know I'm talking to you. And, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm not criticizing either one. This is an observation. No other team has these types of little petty beefs between former players and players, between players and players in the Cowboys organization. They just do. It's just something. And I think it's part of the culture that they are a reality TV show, they are. They promote their players. They want their players to have their own brands. They are, like I said, the number one TV star on the number one TV show. And it's just even their family members get on it. Dak Prescott's brother gets in on it, and CeeDee Lamb's like mom gets in on it. Like, I'm talking about that's no other team has. That's unique to the Cowboys.
No, and I mean, I don't know if it's a good thing,
but it sells.
No, we saw it with Dalton Schultz was talking about the difference of the weight rooms and just the training rooms and saying, well, in Dallas there was a giant window where tourists would walk by and tap on the glass and so it's just that different culture of everything is a show. Everything is kind of about, we're not telling our players, things stay in the locker room. We figure this out. You don't go report. It's not a message of passed down from veterans to rookies to say, I saw you online. Man, get off that. Get off Twitter. Get off Facebook. You can't be posting that stuff. That's no good. That's not focusing on the goal. We need to focus on the goal. That's just not what they're doing. And, you know, you can't say it works because they haven't won at the level they need to win. But you also can't say that's the reason. It's neither or. But, yeah, it is interesting to see that it constantly is the star players responding to guys that you don't need to respond to. Like Cole Beasley's fine. He is his, but he's going to say, you're CeeDee Lamb. You're going to be fine.
Exactly. You're CeeDee Lamb. You're good.
You're going to be fine.
No, remember Micah and DeMarcus Lawrence had this beef for a while?
Yeah.
Because DeMarcus Lawrence said something about Micah and an observation about them in the playoff game. Their drama. I'm sure there's drama going on with the team. But it just plays out public with the Cowboys. And they openly do it too. Like they invite it as well.
And there is something to be said of it's a Cowboys, so everything is magnified.
That is also true.
Just grandiose.
Totally agree.
I mean, because you can look. We're both Texas fans. There was a lot of drama that went on for several years with the Texans, and it went a lot of it under the radar because they were not winning, and it wasn't that.
Yeah.
And so the Deshaun Watson stuff blew up. But when you know, when you have one of your best wide receivers in the history of your franchise, one of your only Hall of Famer, comes out and says, I denounce the franchise because of the owner and because of this and all the stuff they're doing, and that's not a huge story. That would be gigantic if it's a Cowboys story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there is something that everything gets so magnified that stuff probably does happen on some level of this on other teams. But if you say, you know, if it's a player on the Cardinals right now, you don't necessarily – it's not necessarily the biggest story. It's probably in the news cycle. It maybe never even hits the major news cycle. It's in the Arizona news cycle for a little bit, and then it passes through. And the Cowboys is always going to be national news. The fact that Dak Prescott, a picture of him in a walking boot, was front center of all sports media for a day should tell you how important it is that everything's going to be magnified. But the Cowboys definitely don't see that and then walk in their locker room and go, everything is magnified. Everyone shut up. Nobody say anything. Because if anything gets out, and that's the difference that you see is they don't seem to want to stop it. So it is magnified. It is something that's probably not as unique to them, but the fact that they don't ever try to stop it is unique to them.
I think they embrace it.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's different, because I think they actually embrace it. I think that's something that the Cowboys embrace, and it's not something – and like I said, I'm not saying it's bad or good, but like I said, I remember when CeeDee Lamb's mom is saying, Dak isn't it, and I was like – I'm sure other teams deal with it as well.
No, I mean, we saw – remember OBJ's dad posted the whole –
no doubt.
Video.
Yes.
And so
about
the routes and when he was
open.
But I said
the Cowboys, it happens all the time. That happens.
It's common.
We cover the Cowboys a lot, and it happens a lot with the Cowboys.
Yes.
Yeah, those stories, we cover the NFL too, and we talked about that when it happened. But those seem to be, like I said, rare and far and few between. You know what I mean? Few and far between, and with the Cowboys, it's every week. That's going to be one of these random stories. All right, but we'll get back to the Cowboys. Oh, as a matter of fact, I think, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine, because the Cowboys running attack, I heard Greg Cosell talking about it. It's going to be bad, because I don't think the Cowboys have done anything to really boost their running game. They don't have any running backs, in my opinion, who are considered difference makers, and that includes bringing Zeke in. So they're gonna rely heavily on the passing game, and CeeDee Lamb is about to get paid, and I think Dak's probably gonna get paid too, and those guys are gonna get paid top of the market money for their positions. But another guy, I think his stock is just gonna be up because they're gonna throw the football a lot, is Jake Ferguson, and I don't think people realized last year that Jake Ferguson, career highs in receptions 71, 761 receiving yards. And five touchdowns. And he, if you go look at it, he had the playoff loss, demoralizing playoff loss. He actually finished with 10 receptions on 12 targets, 93 yards. I mean, he had a breakout kind of performance later on in that playoff. So I think he's a guy that, if you look at it, probably should, if you're a fantasy person, man, you probably should be looking at Jake Ferguson. He might become Dak's second favorite target in this offense, period. He's less competition in year two for target share. He's already just one of seven tight ends with 100 targets. You know, they got a weak running game. Dallas has the sixth highest pass rate, and they were first in pace. And he had the best single game fantasy football performance among all tight ends last year. It just came during the playoffs, but he had 37 points per reception points in that playoff game that I talked about. So I don't know if we talk enough about Jake Ferguson. I don't think we've talked about him at all, really, because we've been talking about CeeDee Lamb and some of the other weapons on offense. But that actually, and they've invested in tight end too. We drafted a tight end, the tight end out of Michigan last year, and you know, he hasn't really worked out for him. But Jake Ferguson, I'm telling you, he's going to have a breakout year this year. Remember, Travis Kelce said he loved him some Jake Ferguson, said he was going to be a really good player. Just saying, watch out for him.
Yeah, no, and I don't think he's going to be stuck in run blocking a lot either. So
no,
he can get out there and get some routes.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Cowboys are going to find out early on that their running game is one of the worst in the NFL, and they're just going to put the
football in debt. It's one of those other pieces. It feels like the Cowboys have business they still need to do, whether it's a trade or whether it's waiting for somebody else to be available that gets cut as a running back, signing their free agents. I got asked that number of times of people I was talking to over the break. People asking, you know, well, are the Cowboys, they're not really just going to go into next season. And it's like, it doesn't feel like they're done, does it? It doesn't feel, because if it does, it feels like they're rebuilding. If they don't re-sign any of these players before the season, if they don't get a running back, if they don't, you know, invest anything else into this team right now, it feels like this is a rebuild year. It just feels like it. And I know they're still going to be good, which means you're not tanking, but it also feels like you're about to go into a rebuild. It doesn't feel like that's what they want to do. We talked about with Phil Knight earlier. It doesn't feel like an 81-year-old Jerry Jones is going to want to go into, let's hope that we find the next quarterback and we'll save our resources and then we'll build after we get rid of a bunch of these high-dollar players. That doesn't feel like it's going to happen either. I would bet more if you were to tell me that they do make some deals in training camp and try and do something. I don't know what they're going to do at running back. I think they're going to bring in one more. I don't think they're going to trade unless it becomes horrifically bad. And I don't think it'll be that bad. I think Rico Dowdle will average over 4 yards a carry, which is what it will be enough. They'll average like 4.1 probably per carry, something of that effect. If he doesn't, I don't think Zeke will. So that'll start to be a problem. But even at that, I don't think you're going to have those explosive plays out of the run game. And so it'll be a problem, but I don't know if it'll be bad enough that in the first few weeks of the season they make a big trade to go try and get a running back.
That's what I said. I think it'll just be bad.
I feel like it feels like they're still going to do something.
I hope so.
Can't be. It just doesn't feel like that's what's going to be end up being.
And I do think they'll sign. They got to sign. They'll sign. I think they'll sign CD and Dak. I do. I just cannot see them having a doomsday scenario where they go into the season with both of those guys playing out the last year on their contracts. That's a disaster waiting to happen. I think the Cowboys are more responsible than that. You got to trade them though, because then you just let them. That would be the worst case scenario, to let them just play out the deal and become free agents. At least sign them and try to trade them, or trade them, then they could sign somewhere else and get something.
Yeah.
You got to do something. You got to get something in exchange for those guys.
But I think they'll
do something.
I'll be critical of Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and all of that. I don't think they're dumb and they're bad at their jobs and that bad to just say screw it. Let's let 2 to 3 great players walk with no cost for any of that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And we'll just start over and hope we'll draft some guys.
That's malpractice, man.
Because we're worried about the cap, and we don't want to pay any more on it. It just doesn't seem like they're going to do that.
At least CD. You trade because you got examples of CD being traded.
Yeah.
You know, I think you would trade Dak, too. I think if you really – that's how you feel you want to move on from. Don't – yeah, you said – don't be irresponsible to the extent where you allow both those guys to leave via free agency and get no ROI, no return on that investment. That would be one of the worst decisions in the history of sports. I don't think the Cowboys are that. They're not that stupid. There's no way.
I don't think so.
It's not going to happen.
And that's I think we'll see something when training camp starts up, when they're out there. I think something will happen.
That's why I think they're like chilling right now. They know nothing's going to disrupt the market unless it still could if, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes could redo a deal. We talked about what quarterbacks, Jordan Love could could do something crazy with Tua. I don't think Tua's going to get that kind of deal. I don't think he is.
But again,
Jordan Love is the one that could disrupt.
And CJ,
CJ Stroud's got a while, but I'm going to say, I don't know how long they're going to wait on this thing. Josh Allen, I guess he just signed a deal. There are not many other quarterbacks that could disrupt the market, so maybe they're comfortable knowing what they got to pay.
Yeah. I think it'll happen at camp, but they've done a lot of deals at camp. It just is weird. It's just covering it. This is not how most teams do business.
No. But I'll admit, the price tag, right? The price is the price at this point. CD's going to be, what, $33 million? Not Justin Jefferson, but right under him. And Dak's going to be $60 million. Thank you, Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, to me, essentially cemented Dak's position in leverage. It's a done deal. How about this little factoid about the Cowboys? I know we're not in with the facts, but I'm going to share this anyway. Over the last 20 years, the Cowboys have the highest average season win total of any team that hasn't won a Super Bowl. We'll come back. We'll get into Rod's rant of the day. NFL related, it matters if you score first. We'll talk about that and why that is the case. And we'll also dive into the states who produce the most NFL players per million. I like that, per million. All right, new study that I found. We'll dive into that. And you'll be a little surprised where these pockets of talent are in around the country. Because there are certain areas where I think there are four of them now where there are certain pockets around the country where these areas are producing they're overrepresented and disproportionate in terms of the comparison to the population of the amount of NFL players they're producing compared to the rest of the states. 21 states that I found, as a matter of fact, in basically four areas of the country. And we'll talk about that on the other side, right here on the Rodcast, featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've done it now. It's time for Rod's rant of the day.
Hold on to your butts.
To the Rodcast. Time to get into Rod's rant of the day. Let's talk about the importance of scoring first in football. I actually, don't have many theories on it. I got a couple of theories on it, but when I saw these numbers, I just felt compelled to share them. But I do think there's got to be there's some merit to it. That there's something going on with scoring first in football and what it does to your opponent psychologically, or maybe what it does to you as a team psychologically. So teams win 64% of the games when they score first. And this is over the last 10 years. Yeah, so it's over the last 10 years. In the last 2 years, if you look at the number of games of a team that scored first, Baltimore and Philadelphia lead because they're at 23. I think Cleveland, San Francisco, and Detroit are at 22. I saw a stat also in college football that number was upwards of 70. This was from 2021. And that number is upwards of 70%. In college about scoring first. And this was, like I said, this is over 10 years. This comes from Warren Sharp, who does a great job. A couple of little nuggets of information here from the stats statistical post that he put up via Twitter. So the Bears scored first in 10 games last year. That was the number three highest total, but went 6-4 in those games. 1-6 when allowing opponent to score first. Flip side, they were on the bad side of that. Over the last 2 years, Chicago has scored first in 18 of 34 games, but just 8-10 in those games. So, you know, Bears got some issues. The Chargers scored first, it says here, in 11 of 17 games, but went just 5-6 in those games, and went 0-6 when allowing opponents to score first. So they're kind of outliers in this whole thing. Cowboys were 10-0 last year when scoring first, and 2-5 when allowing their opponents to score first. Chiefs, and this is kind of freaky, Chiefs are 18-1. I mean, the Chiefs are at a different level altogether. Interesting that the Cowboys, though, are 10-0 when they're scoring first. So the Cowboys, they are kind of the epitome of this trend. And this as a factor in football, just being able to score first and what it does to infuse confidence in your team and what it does to opponents, like psychologically, how they have a tough time kind of recovering from dealing with playing from a deficit for that long. So the Chiefs are 18-1 when scoring first the last 2 years, 7-8 when allowing the first points of the game. So, I mean, the Cowboys and the Chiefs are kind of the best examples of it. Cowboys, when they allow points to score first, 2-5 in those games, even though we pointed out the Cowboys have won 12 games the last couple of years. Chiefs, and I believe the Cowboys are right behind the Chiefs in terms of regular season wins in the last like 2 or 3 years. The Chiefs are 18-1 when scoring first the last 2 years, 7-8 when allowing their first points of the game. So I try to think about what it is psychologically. I looked at Texas too, you know, just looking at Texas football last season. They allowed their opponent to score first in 5 games. They went 3-2 in those games. They allowed Washington to score first. They allowed Oklahoma to score first. It's 2 losses. They allowed Rice and Wyoming to score first, strangely enough. But think about how close that Wyoming game was. It was a tie game to the fourth quarter. The Rice game, that Rice game was 13-3 before a 49-yard field goal ended that first half by Bert Auburn. It ended up being 16-3. And then the Sark run came in. Those runs I talked about with Sark came in the third quarter. You blew them out. I think you end up beating them 37-10. That game ended up being a little tighter than it needed to be. Scoring first against Sark's teams, at least, I think, gives you a good chance to stay in it longer because you keep them from starting their run earlier. There's only a Sark run, and you keep it from starting earlier, and you kind of can halt or force him to postpone his run because Sark's runs allow them to come in his opening script too. His opening script is inundated with cheat codes, hard oftentimes for opponents to you know, get their bearings, to adjust. It takes them a while to adjust, figuring out exactly how Sark wants to attack them, and then they adjust, and then Sark has the counter. But the adjustment sometimes can take a while, and that usually is part of the run. And so scoring against Texas first will give you an advantage. So be watching that next season. So I think it's more about confidence. I just think it's as simple as that. I used to compare it to going out with money in your pocket. If you've ever been broke before, then you understand the difference. Difference how you feel on payday. Going to the club when you're broke as opposed to going to the club on payday. That's how I feel as a defender playing with a lead. You're playing with a lead in football. You feel like you're going to the club with money in your pocket. You're more confident. The way you speak to the ladies, a little bit differently. All right, you got a different walk to you. All right. You know, there's a different swagger that you have. You know, I mean, I would say that you probably are more the life of the party if you got some money in your pocket. If you don't, you'll be a little insecure. Probably not as confident as you usually otherwise would be. You know, I don't know if you want to be life of the party because you probably can't afford to be the life of the party. And I just think it's a confidence factor in playing with a lead for the overall team and everyone. And think about how much before the game, how much hype, how much positivity you have and how deflating could be, like, oh man, I just scored first. And not everybody has the personality that, all right, you know what? Being resilient. Okay, now we face adversity. Let's go fight. There are some folks that they see that they initial score, and they may not have that kind of bounce back mentality, and they'd rather play with the lead. Some people are just better, and some teams are better, programs are better just playing with a lead. So I do think that's just psychologically part of it. So close to 65% of the time, score first, you win the game in football. Period. Not everybody has that, like I said, there are some outliers, we pointed out, but most of the time, that is the case. All right, speaking of football, NFL, I saw this study that was done about the, and it was from Football Scoop, about the most NFL players, all right, per every million people. All right, per state. So how many states produce the most NFL players, and they did it per million people in those states. And I was a little surprised, actually, at some of the studies. And they looked at the basically the average and the mean across all the different states and which states were overrepresented, had disproportionately more than the average across the states, and also they looked at the states that were underrepresented with that average, based on the per NFL players per every million people in that state, and there were 21 states that were quote overrepresented, essentially having a higher, more a disproportionately higher number of NFL players produced per million people in that state. The highest was Louisiana. Mississippi was the second highest. Alabama and Georgia. I didn't notice the trend here. Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia. And here's the outlier. This is the one that kind of stood out and started me to diving down, getting deep into the rabbit hole here. Iowa. Yeah. Iowa's right there. If you look at per million, based on this study, in terms of overrepresentation. So 12.5 per million. Louisiana's at 15. Says here Mississippi's at 14.5. Alabama at 12.7, Georgia at 12.6, and then there is a significant drop-off after that, but that's your top five. And then, like I said, that's your top four, and then Iowa's a part of that top five here, according to this. So there's basically in the heartland of America, maybe that's kind of the area that I'm talking about here, there is, like I said, they're part of the 21 states that are considered that overrepresented, that have more players produced in that state per million people than the average. Utah, Wyoming, and Nebraska actually are a part of those 21 states. So in Iowa, Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, right there in that area. Like I said, I believe that some people call that the heartland. Not sure exactly what area you would have called that, but they are producing NFL players at a weirdly disproportional rate. And those are all, and those states all border one another. Iowa, Nebraska, Wyoming, Utah. And it's weird. And that happens in America, right? And that, think about the SEC. Like the SEC, the reason the SEC is the most dominant football conference is because the states that produce the most NFL players are all right there connected to one another. If you're recruiting, it's all right. You just got to stay in that one area. Just send all your best recruits. And you got you got eight states to choose from now in that area, because Texas is now a part of that. Texas is now a part of the SEC country. They just linked out Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina. Man, that's it. So you really got eight. I would throw North Carolina in there, but that's ACC country. But it's still bordering all those states. They're all connected. They're all bordering. all those, you know what I mean, those nine states right there. And if you're recruiting, that is your money territory right there. The southeastern, you know, portion of the United States. That's it. The southeastern region, it's got, that's where the best talent of football is produced in the country. And it's actually not even close. So you got a, you got that pocket. That's the number one pocket. But then there's also, because I said Texas is now a part of that. Texas is so damn big. You can argue Texas is its own damn region because it's so damn big. But now you're part of the SEC country. There's a Midwest pocket, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, 5.9, 5.4, and 6.2 NFL players produced per million people. So there, that's a Midwest pocket. So it's SEC country, Midwest pocket. There's a Heartland pocket. And then there's an East Coast pocket with D.C. Remember I told you guys about D.C. and how Maryland is producing a lot of NFL talent now? Because I've been tracking how what metro areas are producing the most NFL talent in the country. And DFW is second behind Atlanta. And D.C. jumped into my top 10 recently. D.C. and Maryland and Delaware and New Jersey are the four states on the East Coast overrepresent in terms of disproportionately producing NFL players per million people. How about this little, you know what? I'll say that for what the facts actually. I got a factoid about, and I want you to think about it. What's the only state that has no current NFL players? There's one state. Does not have a current NFL player on a roster. It's only one. Think about that. We'll give you that in what the facts, what the stats. And then, other than those other pockets, there's, I mean, honestly, Hawaii, you can throw in there kind of on its own, too. Hawaii is at 7.5 in terms of producing NFL players per million. So, you essentially now, you have four, if you want to include Texas on its own, you can. Because not even California is overrepresented. California is now underrepresented. In terms of the national average. They're under the national average now. So only 21 states are over the national average. Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Iowa, D.C., Florida, Hawaii, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, Texas, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan. And like I said, all of those states, like there are three different, I'm going to say you want to throw Texas in there, I guess you can throw Texas and make it Texas its own region altogether. But basically you have an East Coast region, you got a Midwest region, you got a Heartland region, you got SEC country, and then you got Hawaii, and maybe you want to include Texas separately, but you basically have five pockets of fertile talent in the country that are over the national average of producing NFL players per million people. And like I said, they're all, except for Hawaii, they're all connected. They're all bordering states. They all border. Like New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, D.C., all right there bordering each other. Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, all bordering each other. The pocket of the heartland, Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, Iowa, all border each other. And then your SEC country, they're all bordering states. Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida. Isn't that crazy? Like, how does that happen? None of them are separated. Like, once they are, like, I'm just saying they have these pockets in the region, but they all end up being bordering states. Like, how does that happen, really? Those are the ones that are overrepresented. There's something going on there. There's something going on there. There's something sociologically linking that. You know, just don't – I'm not smart enough to figure it out. Somehow on the text line, y'all can do it. All right, I'm just here to give you the facts, the stats. Oh, speaking of, we got that on the other side. What the fact was that? What's the only state in the union without an NFL player? Has not produced an NFL player that's on the roster right now. I'll give you that on the other side right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
We'll be right back. With all due respect, what the
facts? Statistics. Statistics.
I'm stating facts.
When I go ahead and check the stats, yeah. Numbers gone, it's a fact, yeah. Go ahead and check the stats, yeah.
The lights, that's facts.
Statistics.
All right, welcome back to What the Facts, What the Stats. How about this? Top WNBA All-Star fan votes from 1 year to the next, from 2023. Asia Wilson had 95,860 votes. In 2023 for the All-Star fan vote. In 2024, that number is 607,300. This was actually a couple of days ago, actually, so it could be much higher. Aaliyah Boston in 2023 had 72,294 fan votes for the All-Star game, and in 2024, that number is 618,680. Let's see, try to get another one to compare here. Breonna Stewart had 87,587 votes in 2023. She has now had 424,135 votes for 2024's WNBA All-Star fan vote. And Caitlin Clark, of course, leading all the ladies in votes with 700,735 fan votes for the All-Star game. Man, they really screwed up not putting her on an Olympic team. That was crazy. I still can't believe that was something that they decided was best for the game and for the national team to not put Caitlin Clark on there.
So I believe I've heard the theory, because the All-Star game is the WNBA All-Stars versus the Olympic team, right?
I don't know. I actually do not know that. Is that really it? Interesting. See. That would be really cool. Ooh, now if that's the case, now we're talking about something. That would be wild.
USA, so it's USA Basketball Women's National Team takes on the WNBA All-Stars. So the theory is
The
WNBA wanted Caitlin Clark to be on the WNBA team because they needed to have somebody. So if you say Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark are on the WNBA All-Star team and they're taking on the All-Star, the Women's National Team, it gives that game a little bit more oomph. Of having them both play against each other. She represents the WNBA. You have to have somebody fighting. The theory that I had heard was that this was also a move done with WNBA in mind, that this All-Star game was going to be versus the national team. And if you put Caitlin Clark on it, then who's rooting for the WNBA?
I did not know that was the case. That's a cool. I like that. That's a nice bit. I like that spin. Is this a new thing, or has this been going on? They only have the national team for the Olympics. It's only for the Olympic year.
What I had heard was the reasoning of it. And then also they wanted Caitlin Clark to be in the WNBA instead of overseas playing in Paris. So there was theories of why it happened, that it may have not been necessarily leaving off because they really wanted to leave her off, but because of that they were actually using her in a way to benefit the league.
Okay. I like that. That's pretty cool. Now, if that's the case, you know what? Kudos to you. It's for you guys for being creative. That makes a lot of sense right there. I don't mind that. Now I got to check that game out.
It is funny because it is one of those things where we go, that's crazy. And they go, well, here's this other thing. We go, none of us. We just didn't even know that was a thing this year.
I didn't even know it was a thing. I swear. I wish somebody would have dropped that knowledge on me at the time when I'm ranting and raving about how they screwed up the not putting her on the national team. Also, speaking of Caitlin Clark, she did have the first triple-double for a rookie in WNBA history recently. It was against the Liberty, and she put up 19, 13, and 12. Against the 17-3 at the time first place Liberty, and they beat them. Yeah, they beat them.
No, they're apparently playing better, and they're doing some big things now.
Because Angel Reese had put up 27-10. She had a career high in 27 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks that same day, I believe. And then Caitlin Clark up there with the first triple-double for a rookie. Hey, ladies are balling. By the way, the Sky are on pace. Basically, the Sky are on pace to lose, which is Angel Reese's team, to lose more games this year than they did last year. The Fever are on pace to win, which is Caitlin Clark's team, to win four more games than they did in 2023. So, man, yeah. The women's basketball still having their moment. It's and I can't – actually, I'm with Patrick on that. I did not know – They're going to play the women's national team versus the WNBA All-Stars. That's some good drama. I like it. I actually might have to make an appointment viewing for me now. When is that? Do we know when it is? I got to do some research. We'll let the people know. We'll do some research and let y'all know exactly when that is.
Is.
I don't know the top of my head. I'll let you know.
It's coming up July 20th. July 20th.
Okay. I'm going to write that down in my notes here. Boom. July 20th. Bam. Got to do that. Please don't make it like during the day at some weird time or something stupid. Make it at least kind of prime time.
I think it's on a Sunday. I think that's right. Is it a Saturday or Sunday?
All right,
it's
cool.
On a Saturday.
All right, there you go. All right, yeah, there you go. There you go. So everybody can watch it. All right, there you go. Thanks, Patrick, for that. We appreciate it. All right, that's What the Facts, What the Stats. We come back. We'll get into the moves that the Spurs made over the holiday break and talk about the Spurs plan and the Wimby window. We'll also get into some of the other moves that were made in the NBA trade mill. We'll get into that a little bit and also get into some Texas football conversation. Texas lost out on the number one receiver in the country to Oregon. We'll talk about what that means and could Phil Knight be going all in on NIL. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.